The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest-growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything, from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first global fintech podcast and radio show. I'm Brett King, and with me this week in the studio is...
JP Nichols here in New York.
Thanks for joining us. Yes, we're in New York this week covering FinTech Week in New York City. It's just a few years ago when we first came up with the term FinTech, and here we are in New York doing a dedicated number of shows. We got Next Money, we got Finovate. FinTech's hit the big time, dude.
We were just talking about this earlier. Remember when we were like the handful of crazy people?
I know.
Looking at each other?
We're still crazy, FinTech. But we get paid a lot more for being crazy, right?
Sometimes it pays.
Yeah, people are suddenly starting to listen. It's getting real. So yesterday we had the Next Money conference here in New York, and today we're at Finovate. And we're going to share with you some of the important panels from Next Money in a moment and the trends for FinTech in the new future. But first...
We have some conference announcements. Besides Next Money, we also have our friends at Finovate. They have Findever. That is their conference oriented for the developer community in Silicon Valley, coming up on October 18th and 19th. It'll showcase the latest tools, platforms, and case studies for all those techies in fintech. You can register now and save 20% with our discount code. That's BBanksDevR20. Also, tweet us at BreakingBanks1 if you have any questions, concerns, insights, snarky comments, or just want to share your love of the show. You can tweet Brett at Brett King on Twitter, and I'm JP Nichols, JPNICOLS.
So now, there's not a lot of fintech news this week, but of course, everyone's talking about the iPhone 7 and the new Wi-Fi earbuds that are $159. What do you think about the iPhone 7? You're going to be getting one, JP?
Well, sooner or later, but yeah, so far, the Twitter sphere says, great, that's now $159 headphones I can lose instead of the
$20. Yeah, true.
My wife will never let me get
them. Yeah, true. All right. But I do think, you know, my iPhone's struggling a bit with battery. I think I probably will have to invest in a better battery-powered iPhone, so we'll see. We do have some other news, though. Before we get to the bulk of the show, we wanted to share with you guys a quick interview that we did earlier yesterday with Dazza Greenwood, who is at the MIT Media Lab, and Tommy Leander. He's the legislative assistant from Congressman Schweikert's office. Wasn't there a Schweikert? It was the Apollo 13 astronaut with Jim Lovell. You know, Houston, we've got a problem. Wasn't that a Schweikert?
I think you're thinking of Jack Schweikert. And I'm pretty sure he died in like 1982, so it's probably not the same one. He was only in office for like a month.
But he was a congressman.
He was.
So you can see why I might have thought that there was some, relationship.
Sure.
Okay.
And,
all right.
And I don't think that he introduced any blockchain.
No. But he did cycle the oxygen tanks that created the problem, apparently. But, well, he didn't create the problem. Anyway. Houston, we have a problem. Ron Howard movie, good movie. Tom Hanks was brilliant. They fixed it. They got him home. So, all right. So, listen, let's get back focused. Dazza Greenwood, MIT Media Lab, and Tommy Leander, the legislative assistant from Congressman Schweikert's office, joined us to announce their project to come up with a workable legislative definition of what blockchain is. Here's the interview. So over the last few weeks, we've been talking about different applications of blockchain. Now, for blockchain to be of real impact to the way we think about banking and the way we think about automated contracts and these sorts of things, there's obviously going to have to be some regulatory changes. So how is that going to happen? Well, one of the initiatives that's coming out of MIT Media Lab could be a step in the right direction. I'd like to invite Tommy and Dazza to the show. Dazza Greenwood is with the MIT Media Lab. And Tommy, where are you coming in from today?
Congressman David Schweikert's office here in Washington, D.C.
Fantastic. Okay. So can you maybe, Dazza, can you start? And I love the Dazza. A bit of Australian mixed in here for the show again today. But Dazza, can you give us a bit of background as how this partnership between a senator and MIT Media Lab on the blockchain came about?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having us on the show, too. well, the Congressman Schweikert and I think others in the House Financial Services Committee have been looking at the possibility of incorporating some reference to blockchain in federal legislation. I'll let Tommy speak to that as part of a research program at MIT that focuses on law and technology, law.mit.edu. I realized that that the definition of blockchain in the draft bill language it didn't seem quite right. It seemed like it was a work in progress. We got to talking and realized a good collaboration between the
House. We could add some value to the process. Yeah.
We thought we could. And so we're going to have a public forum, which we're announcing on your show right now, Brett, to engage people that have good ideas and good experience with blockchain to let us know their definitions. And it's on a GitHub repo, and we have a form and a URL that people can use, and it'll culminate in an in-person meeting in the House. And, you know, we loved your last segments here at Digital Currency Initiative and the blockchain aficionados at MIT on blockchain. And I noticed that every single one of your shows, at some point you did around the horn, like, what do you think the blockchain is? How do you define it? It's an open question.
Yeah, and every week, you know, we got a different definition. And of course, we've had Michael Casey from the Media Lab participate on the series as well. But can I ask Tommy, you know, what motivates a congressman to get involved in the topic of blockchain?
Sure. Yeah. So this all started just with our position on financial services. It started with an idea that, you know, blockchain's got some interesting applications, and you can kind of build this out, thinking about how blockchain could participate with the UCC and enter its way into commerce. And not that it's illegal to do so today, but we're worried that if there's no clarification there, and if that we don't get some regulatory clarity here, that we're going to see possibly some bad actors get in ahead of time and try to regulate this new technology to death before we can even get it off the ground.
Right. Which would make the U.S. uncompetitive on a long-term basis.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, great.
It is going to be happening during your show, during Breaking Banks.
It's awesome. Well, we definitely, we can do the C-SPAN thing for...
yeah, we appreciate it. We appreciate it.
Fantastic. Well, guys, thanks for that. Where can we find out more information about the initiative?
Yeah, so you can go to law.mit.edu/blockchain. And by the time anyone hears this, we'll update that page to include the form where people can share their thoughts on what the definition of a blockchain ought to be in legislation, and also learn more about how to participate in the process, follow along, and maybe even join us in Capitol Hill through your show and online.
Fantastic. Yeah, well, look, we'll put it out to the crowd and get them to participate. And for all of you out there listening, check the Twitter feed from Breaking Banks One, and you'll see the link to that site. And you can possibly have your definition of the blockchain enter into U.S. law. That'd be pretty cool. So thank you, Tommy and Daz, for joining Breaking Banks today.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Brett.
No problem.
So if you guys want to participate in the conversation, as Dazza said, you can go to the MIT Media Lab site. Dazza, that's an Australian name. You got that, didn't you, JP?
It's certainly not a name from Ohio.
Yes, Dazza. You can go to the website. We'll tweet out the link. And you can put in your definition of blockchain. And maybe that might end up in federal legislation through the House of Representatives. I mean, they're only having a hearing, but you know how Congress works, right? You have a hearing, and then they have another one, and suddenly it ends up in law after, you know, about $1 billion of lobbying dollars.
Right? Don't tell me this is going to be the King Act.
The King Act. Would that be cool? No, it has to be the Schweikert Act, doesn't it? Or the Schweikert Act. I don't know. Yeah. The Apollo 13 Act.
Yeah. Well, that's second prize. You get sent up into a spaceship
prize.
With not enough oxygen.
Okay. There you go. All right. Now, listen, we have to go to a short break, but before we do, we want to give a big shout out to our sponsor, Temenos. Check them out at temenos.com. We'll be right back with more Breaking Banks with Brett King and
JP Nichols.
Right after this.
business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
Hey guys, it's Brett King from Breaking Banks. If you've ever listened to my podcast and enjoyed it, you'll know I focus a lot on the future. When you look at artificial intelligence, robotics, self-driving cars, smart infrastructure, smart cities, health tech, gene editing, computers everywhere that are smart, this is going to have major impact in the way we live our life and the way society interacts. That's the subject of my new book, Augmented, Life in the Smart Lane, which comes out in the first week of May. Ramez Nam, the Philip K. Dick award-winning author of Nexus, said, "You need to read this awesome roadmap of the future that Brett King has created." Please go and check out Augmented, Life in the Smart Lane, available on Amazon for order today.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag Breaking Banks. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. It's JP Nichols
and Brett King.
We're here in New York at Finovate. Yesterday we had Next Money New York. And
the luxurious Breaking Banks Studios in New York.
Yes. Well, guess who just came out of the green room? Our old friend Jim Marus.
Woo!
Jim, welcome.
Hey, good to be here.
Yeah, always glad to have you. So you were at Next Money. What was your favorite part of the day?
You know, it's very interesting because I've been to, I think, all of the Next Money USA events. And when you consider the fact that 2 years ago we started off in Boston with a small circle of friends, and today was a full house, standing room only crowd of very enthusiastic people from completely diverse backgrounds, ranging from students in law students to the people that we see at most of the events before we go to Finovate. So it was a great event overall.
Well, it was glad to have you there. A lot of familiar faces, but some new ones. We also saw some new early stage companies. This was the North American finals, well, actually final for North America and the rest of the world for the BBVA Open Talent Challenge. So we saw 18 different companies. We had two winners that will win 30,000 euros, a chance to spend a week in Madrid and another week with the BBVA team in Mexico City. So some bright young people with us today. A lot of them were a lot younger than us, Jim.
Well, and you know what? The technology that they were presenting was so much more sophisticated than what we even had a couple of years ago. They get what the problems are. There was a great augmented reality bank branch that really caught the crowd by surprise because this didn't exist. The capabilities and the thought process wasn't there 2 years ago. So it was a great event.
It was a branch, dude.
It was a branch, yeah.
It doesn't matter whether it's augmented reality or physical. It's still going away.
Unless it's in my living room, which is what I see. I see this, what was presented today, not being in a branch, but actually being in my living room where I'm going to be able to do my banking in a virtual branch in my living room.
Yeah, but can you catch a Snorlax? That's what really matters, right? For those of you who play Pokemon Go. And Jim, you know, you talked about the first Next Bank event in the U.S. in Boston 2 years ago. I remember who we had there was Ramez Nam.
Yeah, and he just went on to become the Philip K. Dick Award author this year for science fiction. So how cool is that, that we had, like, one of the leading science fiction authors today? We had him just a couple of years ago at Next Money in Boston. It shows that, yeah, we tap into the right people, I think.
Yeah, that's right. And that's the big award if you're a science fiction writer. So, yep, what used to be Next Bank now is Next Money. And speaking of that, so we had a great panel today that we're going to play a little bit of for you. So we had a panel on the future of fintech. And Penny Crossman from American Banker and editor-in-chief of Bank Technology News moderated the panel. Along with her, we had Janine Hurt. Janine is the head of community at Innovate Finance in London. We had John Zianoff, who's very well known in the New York fintech circle. He is entrepreneur, in residence at Techstars, and he also runs Empire Startups here and in San Francisco. And we had Susan Joseph, who was a founder and CEO of ID 2020. So we'd love to have your feedback on this panel. So send us any questions on Twitter, and we'll work to get responses from the participants. But here is the FinTech Future panel from Next Money New York City yesterday.
So here to talk about the future of FinTech. I would say over the past year or so, we've seen a lot of disruption in online lending, in payments, in robo-advisory or wealth management. And those things aren't going away. There have been some hiccups in online lending, of course, but those are still going fairly strong, I would say. What are some of the next areas that are ripe for disruption and, you know, about to be hit with all these smart fintech companies that are going to take market share in business and whatnot? Janine.
Sure. I think, Penny, what I would say to that also is that in terms of looking at the future of fintech, so the stories that you hear about, say, JP Morgan or OnDeck or Cabbage and Santander, that type of collaboration and partnership is also what we see going forward. And potentially that's a UK base, but in reality, we are looking at a future of more partnerships and collaboration across the industry and across, it's one of the key trends. I think if you look at verticals or specific themes within financial services, one area that's really ripe for innovation at the moment is the cap market space, so capital markets. I think traditionally and historically, investment banks have spent a lot of their budget on innovating the front office, and therefore they have very archaic legacy systems in the middle and the back office. So over the next few years or in the near future, we're going to see a lot more innovation coming out that's changing everything from client onboarding processes, data analytics or client analytics, client relationship, trade origination, M&A, really across the board. So that's an area I would pull out. I think financial inclusion is very critical. Reg tech is another big one. In the UK, we have open standard API program taking place. So we'll see a lot of new fintechs that are bringing new new services to make a better experience for the client and end consumer as well.
Awesome. Has everyone heard of blockchain? I don't really care about it. It's a little bit frothy. To be honest, I say pump the brakes when people are ready to stop talking about digital advisors and robo-advisors. And why I say pump the brakes is they're really just a portfolio of ETFs, and my portfolio has a whole lot more than ETFs in it. So they're just scratching the surface. I think it's the opportunity is tremendous across different asset classes and different types of accounts. So before we go to jump to potentially transformational technology, there are areas of fintech with just wild opportunities. The other theme that I continue to talk about is just gig economy and gig economy workers. I think the last stat I heard was 53 million Americans are 1099 contract workers. That represents an amazing opportunity for financial technology, whether it be offering them new products, helping with their taxes, understanding their risk profile, and offering them different diverse products that they may not have access to today. But just unbelievable opportunity in both those areas, just to name a couple.
So I look at insurance tech because I think that that is an industry that's just completely ripe. It's doing business in a way that hasn't changed for many, many, many years. So that's one area that I look at, and I think that there's quite a lot of, ties into the gig economy, that there's quite a lot of innovation that can happen with insurance products as data becomes available in different ways, and tech, blockchain if you like, enables different access. But the other interesting thing, and I want to talk about that in the gig economy, is that think about the workers that are working in that capacity, and how have they just come on magically, or were they displaced workers? And are we going to see displaced workers coming on because fintech is coming on? I think that this is a pretty big issue, because if you look at workers who will end up being displaced because of automation, what are they going to do? Are we going to provide any sort of training? Do we have any sort of sense of how that's going to go? Are we going to end up with a lot of disaffected people in the population? Because there is a lot of recipe for unrest at that point. So, and you know, when you think about, too, a lot of the back office things that are being displaced by tech, again, it would, in a lot of cases, disproportionately affect women because they tend to hold those jobs. So not that I want to be on the soapbox saying, okay, let's get women jobs. It's not that. It's let's get people jobs and let's think about this in a really straightforward way. Because just as technology can blow up jobs, it can also create brand new jobs that are much more technical and require much more service and much more knowledge. So maybe what we want to do is try and retrain and reuse what we've got and redeploy it.
If I can add, I mean, gig economy is a new fancy buzzword that people like me blog about, but it's a look to your left, look to your right. If they're not contract workers, then you are. We're talking about 1 out of 3 Americans are contract workers and have challenges getting a credit card because their risk profile is difficult to understand given their revenue streams. So this isn't like a what if way in the future when people are disrupted or leaving their current job, their W-2, and they become 1099. This is an opportunity today and a frothy opportunity for fintech investors.
Let's go back to Susan for a minute, because that's an interesting point that I think about a lot, because technology displaces jobs all the time. And when you think about AI and bots and so many of the things that we're talking about today, there are going to be more jobs lost, and some of that is inevitable. I mean, do you think that if you are working for a fintech company that is creating something that is going to take the place of people that are doing customer service jobs or back office jobs or any kind of job, do you have a responsibility to try to give something back or to try to somehow offer some kind of training to the people who are going to be laid off? I mean, how can anybody make that? It's a little bit off topic, but how does anybody make that connection?
So I don't know that necessarily the company displacing. They're usually a unilateral, I'm trying to get my product to market. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, they're focused on just that aspect. And I don't know that they necessarily are the ones to do retraining. Mm-hmm. But they're certainly, since they've the ones who've identified what needs to be disrupted, should be consulted about people who are going to do retraining, because they've studied the market and they understand what's being disrupted. Mm-hmm. So they understand what skill sets have already existed and they're replacing them with tech. Now, what can we do with those skill sets to morph them to help out on the other end of it? I don't think it comes from the same company, but I think it's a big opportunity because there's always going to be jobs. And I don't think we're ending up in an economy where we're all going to not work. I just think we're going to work differently. Mm-hmm. And the question is, how is that? I mean, I know that the Singapore government is looking at this because they are aware that their economy is going to change. And I know they're looking to try and do projects or studies or address this problem. I mean, it would be, I think, foolish for any economy not to look at this as you understand the level of transformation that's coming.
I think if I could add to that, so I absolutely agree. And also, if you look to the future, by 2020, 50% of the workforce will be Generation Y or Z at that point, which will be digitally capable, so that's something to keep in mind. But I think also if you look at fintech, and yes, there may be some less positive results in terms of that, but there's also such a hugely beneficial social impact that fintech can have in general. So in terms of helping to bank the underbanked or the unbanked, we have 2 million people in the UK that are outside of the banking space. I think it's about 35 million or so in the US. And you're seeing all of these new companies and new technologies that are coming and saying, look, for example, Credit Kudos helps individuals that have no past history of credit or have a very slim credit history to get that credit history so they can be included within the financial services space. We have also a number of members. Doreming is a Japanese company, for example, and they're helping refugees to gain access to financing. So it's and to bank accounts, etc. So I think it is also important, while we can look at the job loss, it's also very critical that we showcase and really emphasize how important fintech is to making a wider group access, giving them access to finance.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So let's talk about technologies a little bit. Blockchain already came up. You mentioned there's a tremendous amount of hype around blockchain. But if you had to guess, you know, where do you think blockchain technology really will take root and, you know, be sensible?
So I hate it. I hate it and you want me to talk about it. Let's talk about something else, shall we? No, I don't by any means hate it. I think it has the opportunity to be transformational. I think there are a number of opportunities to introduce transformational technology. When I think of regulation, every time there is regulation, that is the opportunity for transformational technology. By its very sort of definition, I say regulators are creating lotto tickets for entrepreneurs to pick up and create a new technology. That's like the nicest thing everyone's ever said about a regulator. Quote me on that. If you want to look at areas that I think are undervalued and opportunities for change, I think that service, if you think of people getting disrupted in certain operational jobs, there's an opportunity for superior service. Everyone likes to crap on millennials and say that they don't like to do anything, they just want to use their phone to ask for help. Well, the thing about millennials and even older millennials like me, what they refuse to accept any degradation in service. So they want a quick answer on their phone. They don't want to talk to somebody. They don't want to go into a branch, but they refuse to accept any reduction in service. And so where there is opportunity both for technology solutions, but also just workers, is around ensuring white glove service, even though I want to ask my question on a phone. And that's an opportunity where we can get into bots and what bots are doing, but that's a bit of an uncharted territory and right now undervalued, I think, in the market.
Yeah, a lot of people talking about chatbots, you know, using chatbots within Facebook, mm-hmm. or within your app, or possibly within Twitter or other social media channels. Is that practical, or are we going to hit into some like privacy and security issues when you try to talk about personal account information over a bot? It's not something I've like looked deeply into. So that's why. Maybe Susan, do you have a thought on that?
We don't have privacy experts
on the panel, but what I would say is every you know, regulatory challenge, every compliance challenge like that introduces an opportunity for innovation, and I don't think that's going to be the gating factor.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I would just echo that what John says, because I think there's so much of a focus on saying that security or protection is actually a hindrance to innovation, when in reality, if you can look at it as more of an enabler, then that's where things start to happen and things start to change. Mm-hmm.
So a lot of this, and part of where I work and have a lot of interest, is in the concept of identity. And identity seems to underlie everything of what we're talking about. And I specifically have some positive thoughts about blockchain and have done some work in looking into that. But that, to me, is really where you want to talk about what the killer thing is that's going to happen. You can't automate without understanding who's behind it. That's identity. And how are you going to parse it? We're left with legacy systems at this point in every place that had a system, which is basically however we collected identity many, many years ago, transformed from paper into something that looks like a digital file and does not actually accommodate what a digital mindset might be. So we hand over in the U.S. our social security number where we don't have to, because that's not relevant necessarily or even useful, and it wasn't even the reason why social security was ever formed. It's just a convenient use of it. I think a lot of rethinking has to happen in order to understand how we're going to automate going forward. So that's kind of, and it's not an easy question, and it's not an easy answer, and it's one that involves regulators, privacy, security, technology, political and cultural conversations. And I don't think there's a quick fix. So I throw it out there just because I think it's really juicy and it's something that needs to be solved, and we are in the fortunate position of actually having a lot of people thinking about it because we're in this technological wave, and that's a great thing. And on top of that, since we have all of these people who don't have identity in the world, we have a chance to do something really cool and humanitarian that's going to kind of help everybody. So I think we're just happen to be at a really unique place in history, and I'm happy about it, even though it's very uncertain.
So there are a few countries that have started putting identity information on some kind of blockchain. I mean, do you think we will get there here? Is that
It could be. I mean, obviously, example would be Estonia, which is kind of the country as a service model, and Singapore, which is moving towards that. And I'm not up on what happens in Europe specifically, but I know that things are different than here. I just think that what we've got is a bunch of legacy technology that doesn't work in a lot of cases, or that we're trying to adapt on top of, and we can't. We can't get that clean service that we just can't, because we're putting apples and oranges together. So we have a chance to really think big and then come up with something that might work, because everybody seems to be at the spot of understanding, well, I really don't want my stuff hacked again. I really don't want to give this stuff out. I really am afraid to do this biometric because I can't keep it safe. I mean, we've all experienced that. So I think, you know, there's a tipping point where we just say, all right, we get to reform this as a global society. Let's try and think about it.
Mm-hmm. Right. And there's a lot of work to be done, because when you have, 16,000 financial institutions and then however many other companies that need to be involved, plus the government, getting everyone to agree on particulars is a little tricky.
Baby steps.
So what are some of the best new ideas you guys have heard in the whole area, you know, whether it's from fintech startups or from banks themselves or from people like Susan who really think outside the box? What are some interesting new things you guys are interested
in? I saw Live Oak in the room. They're playing on the fact that everyone wants white glove service, but they don't want to walk into a branch. It's a fantastic opportunity. A couple others that get me excited, on the talked about gig economy, is a company called Painless 1099 that automates tax savings for contract workers. They create a synthetic account between their company or their revenue streams and their checking account, and uses artificial intelligence to siphon off the appropriate amount of money. Another one that's exciting and fun to talk about, and I think they're demoing at the New York meetup tomorrow, Earnit, a digital piggy bank. We all learn the value of a dollar through something really tangible that we could put coins in, immediately dump them out and count them, and then put them back in a piggy bank. The savings apps that we give children today, it's hard for the newest generation to understand the concept of money when everything is digital, where if you can marry that with an IoT device, Wi-Fi enabled physical piggy bank that you can interact with every time grandma sends you $5, I think is an amazing opportunity for financial literacy. So just those three.
Janine?
Yeah, that's a hard question. I think there's a lot of really, really cool stuff out there. I think Clio AI is really interesting. So basically it's a platform that works through texting, and you can ask about your balance. So what is my current balance? Where have I spent my money this month? And it has an algorithm to respond and give you a better picture about your finances. I might be a bit of a geek, but I think the whole RegTech space is really interesting. So you'll hear later on today from a very cool company, Cybernetics, about how they're helping institutions and organizations to detect fraud. So I think that's very cool.
And when you say RegTech, do you mean companies providing compliance solutions for existing financial...
A lot of tickets, mainly.
A lot of tickets.
Right? No.
Yes. So I mean, fintechs that are helping... companies either to comply around things like KYC or AML or PSD2, for example. I've also heard people use it actually to relate to technology that's helping the regulators themselves too. So you can do
that. Yeah, we saw an interesting KYC applications this morning. Susan, any new ideas?
I don't have the names of the companies. I mean, I can't say them, but I do know that there are some interesting stuff going on in Africa with payables and payments that you could easily adapt to, say, a refugee population or a unbanked population anywhere. And these are, so when I look at this, it's not just that you're looking at data and money being transferred. So the question is, do you want to look at the data aspect or the money aspect or both? And then what happens when you're going to talk about moving to digital currency? Because that is clearly something that looks like it's on the move as well. Mm. So wearables for me is a really interesting spot, because that actually takes some of the payments piece of it and puts it in different hands than traditionally financial services have been in. Mm-hmm. And so then you have a whole bunch of privacy concerns and security concerns and who are you reaching concerns and who are you trusting with that information concerns, et cetera. So there's a lot of things that can go along with that, but I think that's when... a fairly interesting area that's coming along.
It's interesting how here it's like the Fitbit, basically, that broke that market. It's interesting. You have companies like Barclays that have been interested in wearables for so many years and have done so much experimenting, and it's still kind of a niche. I don't know. Besides the Fitbit, like, what's going to really break that barrier? What are some areas in financial services in general that, you know, haven't been disrupted but perhaps should be, that really need some shaking up? Some fresh ideas, some new technology.
Yeah, exactly. Insurance just hasn't
seemed to keep pace with the times in
general.
Are there any insurers out there? Because I don't really mean to be mean or anything, but...
Follow-up question, do you have a BlackBerry? Yeah. The answer is yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I have a BlackBerry.
but, you know, insurance is a really interesting risk reduction product that is kind of just been there in one form or another and not in a form that's particularly responding to what the products are that are out there. So there's plenty of ways to go about this, machine learning, and they have incredible databases. Insurance is all about underwriting. So they've got the data, and the data is really what you want to offer products. So I think that whole front end, back end, collections end, I can tell you for sure from a personal experience that I was a general counsel at an insurer, the collections end could definitely stand to be renovated, and the claims end, the reinsurance end, I mean, take your pick, because there's just a lot of room for this, and it's fun stuff. So wait, really, if there is an insurer out there, let me know.
Susan touched on the fact that insurance companies tend to be late adopters, to put it really as gently as I'm humanly capable of putting it. And so when you think of what is the recipe for innovation or for large enterprises adopting new technology, they have to want it. And that's significantly lacking. And so until sort of that changes, there will be opportunity. Anytime you see stacks of paper in an underwriting process, of course, you say, technology. But unfortunately, we're talking about very slow BlackBerry, sorry, Mars folks, BlackBerry toting enterprises. Mm-hmm. I think the, you know, an area where it's sort of beset with paper, old processes would be the mortgage industry. Mm-hmm. There's companies like Morty that are creating completely digital mortgages that can take the closing process from 47 days down to 7 days, a process that costs mortgage companies $7,000. Their cost is something around $60. There are massive opportunities, and you have, of course, the market demanding better services and better experience. You know, that's an area where I think we'll continue to see, despite what the Quickens, the Rockets, and a few other players, they've got. If they have money to advertise in the Super Bowl, you can guarantee they're making enough money that they're going to be a tremendous opportunity for entrepreneurs to disrupt.
Yeah, and I would just add, I think on the insurtech side of things, it's one of those areas where I think it was 2 years ago they said insurtech was the next big thing, and then last year insurtech is the next big thing, and this year. So it's very much up and down, and the innovations that we've seen thus far have been primarily more on the distribution side rather than really trying to transform the business model itself. There are signs that the appetite is getting bigger, because I agree absolutely with both of what Susan and John said, that it's really trying to find the momentum from some of the institutions to create that interest in innovation. But you do have, say, the Viva Labs or the AXA Labs, so we're hoping that it's going towards innovation, but it seems to be a long and tough road ahead.
Now in banking, a lot of the fintechs had to kind of take a circuitous route, like we'll offer the loans online, but we have banks in the background that are actually doing the underwriting and then investing in the loans themselves. And you've seen that with a lot of the wealth management and personal finance apps as well. There's often a bank, an anonymous bank in the background. Do you think in the insurance market, will that similar dynamic have to happen, or can these fintechs like really break through and take the place of that big insurance company in the background? Again, not to offend anybody, but
I think it's going to have to be circuitous. And I think that that's a good result. Mm-hmm. I'm not out to destroy anybody's industry, and I don't think that we should be. That isn't the point of it. We're innovators. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, we do things a little bit differently, and I am a bit out of the box on some of this stuff, I know, because on the humanitarian side, you have mm-hmm. to be. But I think it would be illogical and really disrespectful not to want to work with the industry and try and make it better. There's a wealth of information, there's a wealth of people, there's a wealth of history and a wealth of good things behind this. You're just trying to make it better. I don't think you're trying to trash it. I think it's a great product. I happen to love it, but it's not, I just think it needs some help.
Mm-hmm. It may be tied to access to capital, which mm-hmm. May sound odd, but we live in a world where venture companies are affording entrepreneurs the ability to truly disrupt and, you know, throw out the old broken car and build a new one. I mean, we get drive around in Ubers. I mean, venture capital are subsidizing our rides these days as Lyft and Uber battle it out, and that's kind of the venture world we live in. On the other side of that, depending on access to capital, the game for entrepreneurs are developing a minimum viable product. And if that means that they first just augment the shopping experience and how you sort of purchase insurance products, and then that may be the way that they start.
And sometimes that can be the tipping point to get an entire organization on board for innovation as well. Because if you change the customer experience, the client experience, and you see the reward in having done that, then sometimes it trickles through.
I also think that on the insurance side, I mean, they're watching what's going on in financial services, and they understand, you know, okay, so if proposals are being made and technologies are being thrown out there that say we can reduce collection costs, we can change our asset management, because they are all asset managers, they're going to look to that and see what's going on there. I mean, their heads aren't in the sand. I think they're just trying to figure out which end is the most logical for them to start in. But there's lessons to be learned by what's going on. For financial services is really leading the way on this, and I think that a lot of the innovation that we see wouldn't have been talked about if financial services hadn't shown up and tried to create this momentum that brings in conferences like this and regulators and governments, etc. That's financial services done a tremendous positive education job for the economy on that.
Right, let's see if there are any questions from the audience. One back there, it's a little hard to see. Oh, there we go, sorry.
You had just mentioned, my name is Brenda Childers, and I'm with the Amsterdam Institute of Finance. And you have just mentioned that the financial services industry has an important job to do with respect to educating people. So that caught my interest immediately. I would wonder if you have anything more to say on this, because I do agree.
Is that me?
Or whoever would like to, yes.
We can all respond. So I think, you know, and this is coming from my experience over in the UK, but I think if we look at education, it goes back also into the financial inclusion space, and particularly looking at things like pensions. In the UK, there was a pension freedoms that took place last year. So a lot of education that fintechs and new companies are doing are trying to really engage the wider public and have them understand their investments and their pensions and what it means to them. So there is actually a great site, some of you may know, it's boringmoney.com. And it's just fantastic because it's very relatable, and it talks about how you can engage directly as a regular person with financial services and understand your finances more, and features some of the great fintechs that are out there and what they're doing to help make more inclusive financial services space.
A lot of things I want from the U.S. government. Education is not one of them. And we can talk about what I would like when it comes to spurring innovation. It just happens not to be education. I look at a company like Betterment back in the digital advising or robo-advising space. If you've read Betterment's blog, they're really becoming an education company. They really realize that the barrier to entry or preventing them from acquiring more assets tends to be education. So I think it sort of ties into what becomes the next wave of investing. And One could argue that that's those seeking out digital advising digital advisors may be financial literate already, but regardless, the point is a company like Betterment.com ends up being one of the richest resources for financial information.
Dad.
If I can just add one thing, if you look at sort of the initial founding of fintech and the crowdfunding and the peer-to-peer lending, I mean, the guiding force behind that was to engage a wider public in things that were potentially not accessible to them before. So I think that's done its own share in terms of the educational piece.
Tay Revez from Global Reach. You talked about one in three Americans being in the gig economy.
Yep.
But a lot of financial services are geared to people with either predictable steady incomes or a lot of assets. Those 50-odd million people in the gig economy may well have neither. How do you make the bridge between something like the mortgage industry and the gig economy or some of the other big institutions? Because it seems to me they're going to have to turn completely inside out.
So that's fantastic. I think you'll be moderating our next panel.
Yeah.
If you'll have me, I'd love to stay on that panel. The transition and the adoption from traditional banks may be the issue, but the Trojan horse that technologies can offer is the ability to understand again the risk profile of contract workers. If you can deliver the data, whether it be 6, 9, 12 months, 2 years of data on cash flows, then you can probably understand their default risk significantly better than their FICO score. And so the startups that I work with need to learn how to tell their story, and their story is understanding the risk profiles that banks simply don't understand. And if you do offer X percentage or 10,000 new companies or individuals that are ripe for a Barclay card, then I'll tell you what, Barclays will be adopting painless 1099 that I referenced earlier.
So I think you can look also for examples from the financial inclusion world, because they're already starting with people who don't have credit histories, credit files, maybe not even identity to start. And how that information gets generated, captured, analyzed, and used could be a great example of a do good, do well, in that you are helping out in some very horrible circumstances, helping people get on their feet, and yet that same type of system would be useful and translatable in some way to a gig economy type here, where people aren't necessarily dirt poor, but they are suffering from lack of access.
And I think also, so just to flip it from the opposite side of financial inclusion and look at the other side. So we, for example, are working with a very well-known traditional wealth manager that wants to completely recreate how they engage with their client. So,
What's her name? Everyone's pens are out.
Pretty much all of them, to be honest.
All of them.
Wealth managers, like a lot of them are looking at it. But just trying to understand and innovate how they engage with their client and make sure their client has a full picture of their finance as well. So it's across really the board. We're changing as a population, essentially, and we're looking for faster, better, more efficient ways to engage with our finances. So every part of the institution has to change.
One more question?
I just wanted to defend the insurance company. Not that I'm for them, but sorry? Here's my tag. Don't work for it. There's actually a transformation happening there. The top 10 insurers in the United States, at least in the car insurance business, are moving from an actuarian, kind of what's your age, where do you live, to a one-on-one relationship where the app on your phone is actually what determines your risk profile and so on. So it's happening. It's not happening as fast as probably we want, and the bad drivers in the room are probably upset about it, but they're actually moving to big data and moving to using the most advanced technology out there. So,
when you go back to the office, you can just say, John Zanoff said, and any conference room, just John Zanoff said we need to do this. You'd be all right.
Putting yourself on the line. Yeah. Let's just close with a final question. What advice would you give to a fintech entrepreneur starting out in any of these areas? Start with you, John.
You know, it's it may be cliche, but it's surround yourself with tremendous mentors. Companies, when they incorporate, will surround themselves with an advisory board, and it seems like it's checking the box, but the reality is entrepreneurs need to surround themselves with a community of people that can help them. That's in essence what events like this do. It brings the community together, but individual entrepreneurs can do the same thing. And that surround yourself with great mentors may not seem actionable, but everyone you meet, if you're an entrepreneur, add them to a mailing list. Give them an update every 2 weeks, once a month, what you're doing, what you need help with, introductions you'd like. And before you know it, you're going to have really a team or foundation, a village, if you will, of people that are going to help you accomplish what you want to accomplish. So it's really about surrounding yourself with as many people that can help as possible.
I would say probably the best piece of advice is to understand and know exactly the challenge that you're trying to solve. Because quite often, particularly if you're looking to work, for example, with larger institutions, they meet hundreds of fintechs at a time. And if you are not able to very distinctly describe the exact challenge and what your solution does and whether your audience is that specific bank, so to speak, or for a number of different banks, you'll get passed over. So I think it's just having a very clear understanding of what problem you're trying to solve.
I would go one step. I totally agree with both of what you said, but it sometimes feels more basic to me that you need to actually understand the industry that you're in. And I say this in particular because I've been to a number of conferences where there'll be a bunch of people trying to innovate for insurance in particular. And the question is asked, okay, out of the 250 people in the room, how many people have ever worked or talked to an insurer? And the answer is usually one or two. And it's really hard to do a product in the abstract. So you have to really understand. So the advice I would say is make sure you go to those senior people in the industry, get people who you can talk to, who understand, take an online class, go start reading. Wherever you can get that information, make sure that you get that as you're building your business and your product, because otherwise you're not solving the problem that's really useful to be solved for them. And you might have the best tech in the world, but it doesn't matter if you can't apply it.
Great. Well, unfortunately, we're out of time. Thank you so much to our panel. Great points.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for the show this week. But before we go, we have, of course, Finovate wrapping up to, well, it's going to wrap up tomorrow. We're on the first day of Finovate today. All these 7-minute demos going on. I can't tell you who the best to show is. I can tell you Movin demoed today and we rocked. But, you know, there's some other stuff coming up on the horizon too. What's happening on the next money front, JP?
Well, our big event's coming up in January, and that's the FinTech Finals. We're back in Hong Kong again. We had 800 people last year. Looks to be even bigger and better this year. So we'll have FinTechs from all over the world converging in Hong Kong on the 18th and 19th of January. So fintechfinals.com or nextmoney.org.
Great. Well, thanks for joining the show again, JP. It's always a pleasure to have you on. Jim Morales, thanks for joining us in the studio today.
Great to be here. Thanks a lot.
Great to have you back. And please, for those of you listening out there, remember to follow the show on Twitter at BreakingBanks1. You can follow JP at
JP Nichols.
And Jim Morales at
Jim Marus. Yep.
Marus, sorry.
R-O-U-S, no problem.
Yeah, Marus and Brett King, at Brett King. And if you like the show, don't forget to go to iTunes. Leave us a 5-star review. It really helps people find the show and get to know us, and we'd really appreciate it. And thanks, and have a great weekend. And JP, join us again soon.
I'll be back soon.
You'll be back.
I'll be back.
All right, thanks, guys.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern time, for more of the latest in fintech news.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.